Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
And by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex. Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is Drew.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen. And not a one of you is prepared for it.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road and, you know, anyway. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about Rise of the Planet of the Apes. 2011, if I'm correct.
Yeah, man.
So we're going to blame this one on boyfriend Jesse, because I believe this is the one he wanted to start with.
I believe so.
I have been waiting so long to talk about this movie with you guys.
So why don't you start, Drew? Take it away. Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
I've been trying really hard not to tip my hand and not talk about it with you guys or mention it while we've been talking about the other movies. But I saw this when it first came out on video. And I loved it. I was blown away. I hadn't seen the original Planet of the Apes in a long time, probably at least 15 years before I watched this movie. And, I'd seen the Tim Burton movie, but that was forgettable, instantly forgettable. So when I saw this movie, I was blown away by so many things. I was blown away by the special effects. I was blown away by the performances. I'm not really a James Franco fan, but I thought he did a really good job. John Lithgow's really good in this. And the story. They put a lot of heart into this movie in a way that none of the other movies had. So yeah, I really enjoyed this movie. And it was killing me not to mention anything about it while we were talking about the previous six movies.
So, Brother Jay?
So, this movie had a lot of heart in it, but by comparison, that's not much harder to do than the other movies. So, I agree. I actually kind of like this movie, and I've seen this movie before. Clearly, when I was watching it, it was very familiar. So, I must have seen it probably 10, I don't know, however many years ago when it first came out. I thought it was a pretty good movie. There's some obvious problems with the movie that I wrote down. There's some really glaring things that just stuck in my craw, but I was impressed at how good the CGI was, and how good the effects were. And the story, I wasn't bored. It kept my interest. I felt real attachment to the story by emotions. So I was angry and sad in parts, and you know, some parts were cute and funny, and some were sad and very maudlin, and others were just, I was just waiting for somebody to get their face smashed in. So I think all in all, I enjoyed this. So certainly I think out of everything that I've watched so far, this is the best one. Again, though, that's not necessarily saying a whole lot. I did have some problems with some of the blatant callbacks. Like, that trope is so tried and done. You don't need to do that. You don't need to do that.
That's funny. Those didn't bother me at all the way they all annoyed the crap out of me in the Tim Burton movie.
Why is that?
I think because this movie was obviously put together with so much more care. And a lot of the callbacks were pretty subtle, just like mentioning the Icarus thing on the news, you know, the damn dirty apes thing. That's, you know, that was fine, but
Charlton Heston movie on the TV.
I don't even notice that one.
Building the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah. Yeah. That was real subtle too.
Yeah, I mean, It was all kind of, it was woven into the story. It wasn't they weren't shoehorned in.
Yeah, no, I definitely think this was a better story. Again, I had some problems with the story. For instance, the girlfriend character, who was basically a physical manifestation of his conscience, had no purpose in the story. They didn't develop her character very much, and she could have not been in the movie, and you wouldn't have lost much.
Yeah, I actually had not remembered her as a character.
Yeah, that's my point. That there was so little to her substance, and she, I mean, literally, if you removed her from the movie, I don't know that there would have been much of a difference in the movie play.
Nope.
So I think that they did a great disservice in that. They either should have made her part more robust, or they should have just let his inner turmoil surface and work itself out, because she was just a distraction and it seemed like a waste of talent. Not that she wasn't, I mean, she was fine. She was fine as an actress, but the material was thin and I don't know. There was no reason to have made her a love interest, I guess, is my bigger point. Like, she could have just been the zookeeper friend and she could have stepped in here and there, but to make her a full love interest, but barely have her in the movie and only have her as perhaps a little bit of conscience relief, just that bothered me.
Well, she doesn't get damseled, which is good.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, it's, I think it's more of a missed opportunity than an actual negative.
Yeah. I agree with you both. And I love this movie. Like, I was surprised how much I love this movie. I know I spent a lot of time trying to defend the Tim Burton Planet of the Apes because there were things in it that I liked. But this movie just put the lie to that.
It leaves it in the dust.
Movie. It just, all those things that irritated me and kind of took me out of it were not overcome by any heart. It was kind of a paint-by-numbers movie. And this, yeah, it had heart to it. I think, Drew, you're right. It's a heart movie. And plus, with the special effects, like Jason pointed out, it's beautiful. And it's pretty much seamless. At the end, there was a little bit of like jagginess that kind of took me out of it. But for most of the movie, I was in it. It was great. And there were, I mean, speculative fiction, science fiction, whatever you call it, movie. So I forgive a little bit of convenience as far as the science and the plot for the sake of moving the plot along. That was great. I love this movie. And I don't like James Franco, but I liked him in this. So shall we go through?
Yeah.
So first of all, it was directed by Rupert Wyatt, who has done pretty much nothing else except for these three movies.
Yeah, it's so weird that the director of the next couple movies is pretty much gets all the credit for this trilogy, even though he had nothing to do with this first movie, which is fantastic.
And Rick Jaffa and Amanda Silver, they wrote all the new Apes movies, and they also wrote Jurassic World together as husband and wife. And Silver actually wrote The Hand That Rocks the Cradle.
No.
Yeah, one of my favorite Rebecca De Mornay movies.
I think it's the only Rebecca De Mornay movie I could name.
Oh. Risky Business?
Risky Business. Identity. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah, I'm out.
Yeah.
I'm sure they're more like Skinamax type movies. I'm trying to think of other things she was in.
Silk Stockings.
Yeah, something like that.
Nah.
No, that was TV.
I know. I was just... Yeah. I was being goofy.
Yeah, that's okay. You're allowed to be goofy.
And I'm trying to... Drew missed that part.
Yeah.
I was lamenting that on Listen Back, it appears that I sound drunk in episodes when I'm not. And I don't sound drunk when I am. So it amazes me that I need to articulate better in some aspects, but it's a crapshoot.
Okay, here's a litmus test. Were you sober or bombed when you're talking about Shaun White?
I don't recall.
Okay. I was getting a drunk vibe.
Was that last week or the week before?
It was, I think, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, it was a couple weeks ago. It was shoehorned in.
I was likely drunk.
Oh, yeah. By the way, I'm really glad I didn't come off like a lunatic. Thanks. Yeah, thanks for putting all those back to back.
Oh, no, it's charming.
Are you kidding? I was laughing my ass off in my office, and my coworker asked, because she wears headphones, too. We both wear headphones. And she kept taking her headphones off and asked, what are you laughing at? What is so good that you're laughing at? So I was trying to indoctrinate her.
And you're saying, myself?
Yeah, exactly. My brother, myself.
Yeah, no, nothing weird about that. I'm laughing at my own jokes.
My brother discussing the great death techniques of rat killing that he got from our father. So, run the gauntlet, bitch! You know, so...
So we're going to ask for a rodent update. But first, this movie. The film opens at Gensis, a genetic therapy pharmaceutical company. A female ape, number 9, known as Bright Eyes, has been given the drug ALZ-112.
I hate to interrupt you. Doesn't it start in the jungle first?
Yeah, it does. I'm sorry. It does start in the jungle where they capture the apes.
Okay, because boyfriend Jesse made a comment that I wrote down. Hey, look, Nets and the humans aren't as adept as the apes were.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, but that initial scene was really good in sort of setting the tone for the movie.
And actually, it's almost the exact same setup as the movie Rio, the animated film, with less good music. So we have number 9, and it's kind of, it's a sterile... You know, pharmaceutical company, where we meet Will Rodman, played by James Franco, and his boss, Steve Jacobs, played by David Oyelowo.
A very undersecured laboratory. Criminally undersecured.
Well, by the way, we know David Oyelowo from the Cloverfield Paradox and a bunch of other stuff, but mostly just...
He looked very familiar.
MI5.
That's where.
So basically, they're working on this drug to try to cure Alzheimer's. We learn that that's partly because Will Rodman's father, John Lithgow, has Alzheimer's, which is a really touching part of this movie.
It is. But it was weird. They never actually said Alzheimer's in this movie.
Did you say dementia?
They never said what it was.
Well, but they said this was the cure for Alzheimer's when they were discussing it in the crowd, in the boardroom.
Yeah, in the boardroom, yes.
Yeah.
And so by inference, I think you can infer that since he was treating his own father with the drug, that it was Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
That's what I got from it anyway.
The code name for the drug was like ALZ-112, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And apparently 112 refers to the running time of the original Planet of the Apes.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And they're originally going to call it like RNT-112 for runtime 112, but they changed it to ALZ because it made more sense. Again, I don't know if that's true or not, but that's the lore.
It's good trivia.
Yeah. And I didn't recognize him until I looked at the IMDb things, but his assistant, the ape caretaker, Robert Franklin, paid by Tyler Labine. You know who he is?
No.
He is Dale from Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
Oh, okay. That's why he looks so familiar.
Yeah. And Brother Jay, you have to see Tucker and Dale versus Evil if you haven't already.
Well, that's what you tell me.
We got to put it in the calendar. Because A, I'm sure boyfriend Jesse likes it. If he hasn't seen it, he will like it.
I don't think he's seen it.
Oh, it's great. Got everything to recommend it. But this movie has a little bit of a, you know, you start out with a Rio feel, and then it immediately goes to something of a 28 Days Later feel.
Yes.
Where they inject the monkey with the ape with the mysterious substance, and then all hell breaks loose. And then we learn that's because she's preggers. And she actually was not only preggers, but gave birth to a child that she was protecting.
Yeah, so she was pregnant when they gave her the drug that improved her mental faculties.
So her violence had nothing to do with the drug side effects, but everything to do with protecting her child. But it made them like basically flush the drug trials. They decided, nope, can't do this. We'll never get funded.
And put down all of the apes that were involved in the testing.
Yeah, they killed all the apes except for little Bright Eyes Jr. And he gets persuaded, James Franco gets persuaded, because he's not really necessarily into taking a little ape baby home. But he gets persuaded by Dale, who's very persuasive in both movies. And he takes him home. And we find out that he's got the Bright Eyes too. And he also takes home, it turns out Franco is not a great employee. He's a bold scientist, but apparently bold science also comes with a degree of, industrial espionage.
And lack of ethics.
Yeah, there's something there. But...
overall hubris.
Yes. Yeah, well.
A little bit of arrogance. Oh, that's why I reckon. Okay, so, I'm sorry. Tyler Labine.
Yes.
Plays Sherlock Hobbs in the reboot, the Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency show.
Oh, excellent. Is that good, by the way?
I've seen only two episodes. I really like it, but I got rid of the cable box, so, you know.
You've got rid of it again?
No. I got rid of it when it was, because it was out last year. Ah. So, and I had a bunch of episodes on the DVR, and I was like, no. Sorry. Sorry for my
interruption. No, I love the Dirk Gently books. They're great. And it seems like it would be easier to adapt that to the TV in a way that Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy was not as easy. Because that whole Zaphod Beeblebrox, that extra head always is a problem. But anyway, we show that Caesar, named by John Lithgow, who's dementia includes remembering like quotes from Shakespeare.
Did you notice that Will drove the same vehicle, the Jeep Wagoneer, as Escape from Planet of the Apes?
No, I did not know that.
The psychologist drove the little white Jeep Wagoneer. Looked to be about the same model. So
wow. I guess it would make sense. But anyway, yeah, so, sorry. 3 years later, Caesar's grown up quite a bit, and Dad's Alzheimer's getting worse, so that's when Franco goes in and steals the medicine and shoots up Dad.
Yeah, because he's got all this data on Caesar that shows that Caesar is exceptionally gifted with intelligence.
Yeah, it's not only repairing damaged brain cells, but it's advancing growth of brain
healthy,
cells or something.
Advancing healthy cells.
Yes.
Yeah, and Caesar like can fully communicate with sign language, and he's a smart ape.
Yeah. So we bring home the medicine to shoot up Dad, and Dad has a miraculous recovery. But Caesar becomes a problem because you just can't have a monkey live in the neighborhood. And that's where we meet the neighbor, Hunsicker, played by David Hewlett from Cube, among other things.
Caesar's an ape.
And so the neighbor has injured Caesar during this whole thing. And Will has to sneak him into a zoo for treatment. And that's where we meet the veterinarian, played by the veterinarian's name is Caroline, played by Frida Pinto.
Well, the neighbor is an asshole, but it's not like he hunted down Caesar. Caesar went into their garage because he was going to fix the children's bicycle.
Oh, I thought he was going to steal the bike and ride it.
No, it had like a broken chain. Ah. Or the chain wasn't working properly. So he went in there to fix it.
Oh,
and that's why, and that's when the children found him in there and freaked out.
Yeah, see, I got the impression that we were going to see him like doing wheelies in front of the house on the bike. So when we get to the vet, the vet is really impressed by how much Caesar knows, even though Franco's trying to keep that all under wraps. But Caesar wants to do a meet cute and have them go out to dinner. So yeah, so that was, I guess, a humanizing turn for the Franco character. So we have the nice scene where Caesar's introduced to the Muir Woods, because this whole takes place in San Francisco or outside of San Francisco.
What a great setting for this movie.
Oh, yeah.
San Francisco is a great city to shoot a film in.
Well, and it's perfect.
I thought it was interesting that they juxtaposed that, as opposed to the first movie, which was in New York, they made the remake in California, opposite of I Am Legend, where it was set, the book was set in California, but they redid it in New York. So,
yeah, I didn't, and then again, I don't know, because this is an actual, like, thoughtful reboot, I thought it was great. Like,
yeah, little, it was a nice touch.
Touches like having the woods nearby, and it all makes sense.
So, having not seen the other two movies, I'm wondering how much of the Golden Gate Bridge ends up being like the Statue of Liberty. So,
yeah, I'm eager, because I haven't seen the other two movies either, but I'm eager to see them, especially in my new HD versions of them, provided by
thank you, Brother Drew.
Brother Drew.
Yeah, you're welcome. But yeah, I feared I also might have tipped my hand when I was like, "No, no, you have to watch the real version." For those 48 seconds.
Well, you went above and beyond. But anyway, so we have Caesar kind of growing up, getting smarter. And we see a little bit of he's getting dressed in human clothes. And we see him bark at the dog, which is kind of funny. Well, not bark at the dog, but like
growl.
Do like snarl, a serious, yeah, hiss. Like,
step off,
bitch.
I don't
know about you, but although they never stated outright, you know, I always remember that chimps will rip your face off.
Yeah. Yeah, and didn't they rip that one lady's face off that she had as a pet?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that interaction led Caesar to ask if he was a pet.
Yes, and that, I love that building of Caesar kind of grasping more and more. I mean, this... Again, the best thing about these movies are the apes. The humans are pretty much always the bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it. I love it so much.
Well, and Caesar ends up looking like a teenager. He's insolent and...
And he's not a pure... Like, he's not a force of good character. Well, force of good. He's not like an angelic, saintly character.
He's nearly human.
Yeah, he's angsty. He holds grudges, earned. They're well earned, yeah. But
kind of like the end of what is it? Conquest. They have that really mean ending where Caesar is angry.
Oh yeah,
that they, you know, they veered away from when they did battle. This is more of that conquest Caesar. Like, that's the journey we're going on, kind of.
Yeah, again, and this is something that I didn't want to mention at the time, but that vibe, that speech that Caesar gave at the end of that movie, that gave me the most connection to this version of Caesar that I had remembered from Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
I totally get that.
That sort of... The general. This is the general of the uprising, which is what I one of the things I loved about this movie.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Oh, so turns out, Dad John Lithgow, he took the cure, but it lasted quite a while. But it didn't last forever, and it's coming back even worse. His dementia.
Yeah, it was about 5 years, right?
Yeah, it was quite a long time.
Yeah, but after that interaction in the woods with the dog and Caesar wondering if he's a pet, he starts to ask about his origins, and that's when Franco has to explain to him what happened to his mom, and takes him by the lab and kind of freaks out the vet explaining everything that happened.
Again, she plays his conscience.
Yeah, well, which is a good, again... I think that's a good use of the character, but yeah, it's kind of a throwaway character. But then we have Dad, who again, John Lithgow is amazing. And did you guys see him in Dexter?
Yes.
He was so good in Dexter. But he's good in everything. I love him from Third Rock from the Sun.
Yeah, I agree. Come on, The World According to Garp.
Yeah. Oh, so many stuff, so many things.
Yeah, Ricochet.
Okay, I don't think I ever saw Ricochet, but...
No.
Are you sure we didn't see it in the theater?
What was...
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you saw it in theater.
I'm thinking... Okay, I see the poster for Dr. Giggles, which I realize is actually Benny from L.A. Law, not John Lithgow. But there's a John Lithgow horror movie, too, around that time that I thought was not great, but I'm sure it pays.
Is that the one where he played twins?
Oh, maybe, yes. Yes, yes, yes. It's starting to ring a bell, yeah. So anyway, Dad is confused and ends up getting in the neighbor's car and trying to drive it away. The same neighbor that already injured Caesar before and is an asshole. And he starts he pulls Lithgow out of the car and starts to beat him, or at least restrain him. And that's where Caesar comes in.
Yeah, he was manhandling him.
Yeah.
I don't know that he was hitting him, but...
Yeah, exactly. He wasn't going to, do a curb stomp like American History X.
Right.
But he definitely wasn't going to let him go away. He was calling the police. And it's mentioned that he's a pilot, so we already know he's kind of a jerk. That's for Connie. So Caesar protects Dad, or Grandpa, or whatever... But that's a problem. So animal control gets involved. And I think maybe one of the favorite actors that I discovered doing this podcast. I mean, I didn't discover him first here, but we've talked a lot about him as it turns out.
Brian Cox.
I love Brian Cox. He is great. He's also in the movie The Autopsy of Jane Doe, which is a kind of a weird horror movie that I recommend.
Oh, man. I happened upon that movie flipping channels during a bout of insomnia. Not a great movie to watch in the middle of the night.
No. It's definitely very atmospheric.
Yeah.
And he's so good. Just like, you know, he plays, I think, probably the best Hannibal Lecter. It's the Silence of the Lambs. Hannibal Lecter is better, but
I ride with Mads Mikkelsen.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. See, that's the yeah.
Well, with the time that he had with the character, he did a great job.
Yes, I think he got more bang for his buck than Anthony Hopkins did.
Yes, but remember, he was also in your favorite movie, The Long Kiss Goodnight.
Yeah. Yes, I love that movie.
See, one of the most memorable roles that I saw Brian Cox in was LIE, which is Long Island Expressway, where he plays basically a chicken hawk male child molester who's trying to pick up little gay boys.
Oh, I have not seen that movie.
What does chicken hawk mean?
It's a guy who preys on underage boys.
Oh. Okay. Deadwood. He was good in Deadwood.
Yeah. You notice we don't really talk about the Al Pacino movie Cruisin' a lot either. So,
yeah. But before we get to Brian Cox, that scene where Caesar goes down to defend Lithgow, that goes on for a long time. He chases that neighbor and terrifies.
The whole finger thing.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Bites his finger off.
Yes.
Yeah. It was traumatizing.
That's the first glimpse you have of the menace that Caesar could bring. Because he is truly terrifying in that scene.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's great. And it's hard to describe. I mean, anybody who's already seen this movie, and please see this movie. It's hard to describe, if you haven't seen it, how well, I mean, I understand now why Andy Serkis is credited with a lot of the success of this movie. The motion capture they did is amazing. And granted, there are other motion capture actors in this movie all over the place because there's a lot of apes. But the whole the way they get a true acting performance into what is basically a cartoon is amazing to me.
Yeah, it's so good, especially if you watch any of the special features where you see the shots prior to the visual effects, which looks so ridiculous.
Oh, I'm sure, because everybody's like in like
the ping pong ball outfit.
Yeah, the green suits with the ping pong balls, or are they blue screens or green screens, or?
I think they're like gray leotards, but they have like a harness, and I think they're wearing like a camera that's pointed at the face, so they can capture like the facial expressions and put those onto the visual effects creations. So I don't know. Like, yeah, Andy Serkis did a great job, but so did the actors who shared the scene with him.
Because
they had to do this with a straight face. Like, I can't imagine Franco like having like a serious heart-to-heart with Caesar, who is Andy Serkis, wearing that ridiculous getup.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's that whole thing of, you know, when you see a monster movie, a la Cloverfield. Not the Cloverfield paradox, but Cloverfield, where you end up with having actors having to react to what is basically like a tennis ball on a stick because they mm-hmm. haven't put the monster features in there, no matter whether they're practical or computer animated. But yeah, it turns out there's a thing to acting.
Yeah, that's where the skill of acting comes in.
Yeah.
Any less talented actor, it would be Drek.
Yeah, well, that's why you can get an incredible performance from an actor with like a full face beard, like Brian Cox in this.
in a ridiculous dye job.
Yeah.
Well, it's California.
Yeah.
It's San Francisco.
No, it's great. Mm-hmm. It's exactly what. God, what was his? Who was the actor? Oh, Vincent D'Onofrio in Jurassic World. He was exactly what Vincent D'Onofrio wasn't. and
that's
I
a nice
like
comparison.
Vincent D'Onofrio, but
me too.
Yeah, but they just put him in a park ranger's outfit, and he was just Vincent D'Onofrio-ing it up, you know. But
I think that's what he does.
Well, that's the thing. I'm sure that's why they hired him. But he was a cartoon character compared to Brian Cox. Actually, who's a cartoon character compared to Andy Serkis?
Yeah. What's great about Brian Cox in this movie is you get the feeling that he is just a villainous dirtbag, but you can't ever point to anything that he does.
Oh, exactly.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, his little henchman is the devil, but Brian Cox, he seems like he's probably a really bad dude, but he never does anything overt.
No, not at all. Yeah, he's basically just doing his job.
I'm sorry. Up until the point where he takes a huge, substantial amount of money.
Oh, he didn't.
Did he take it?
Yeah, exactly. He wasn't.
He took it. He put the piece of paper over it. And
yeah.
That's right. Yeah. But then Caesar didn't want to go.
He still kept the money, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, yeah. But he wasn't a villain like his son, Dodge.
Where do you think the son, the little shit, got it from?
I think I was a little concerned that the evil guy was going to be like more goofy than it turned out to be, or more over the top. But I think they crafted this whole movie, like the arc of Caesar, in such mm-hmm. a skillful way. Because you kind of know where it's headed, but they take you along in a very nice way, and you get to see Caesar kind of build himself. Girl, you got to build yourself.
Well, you get to see where he gets the foundation and justification for his rage.
Yeah, and how he's putting together these. He's like a puppet master as well, or he's playing chess.
He's like a political dissident thrown in jail, plotting his uprising.
Yeah,
because it's slow, it's methodical, it's sinister, but it's justified.
Yeah, and if you compare and contrast this to previous Apes movies, you know, like the previous version of Caesar when he was planning his rebellion, that was just a series of scenes with knowing looks. In this movie, you actually get to watch the progression and the steps that he takes. And even though he's not talking, you get to watch him figure stuff out. Like the whole way he figures out how to become the alpha. And it's not because he has the physical prowess.
That's the thing, is that this is just Conquest of the Planet of the Apes. This is just a redo of that movie. But that movie was so... Well, granted, it was so 1972. But it was so, like, made-for-TV movie-ish, you know, like high school production compared to this, which is, I mean...
Yeah, but that's not a fair comparison, because look at the other movies made in 1972. You know, you're going back and looking at that movie and trying to compare forward. And
I don't like that. But Chinatown was in 74, and it was a much better. Of course, it had like probably triple the budget.
Yeah.
So.
And also was, you know, wasn't futuristic. Wasn't sci-fi. It was, you know, it was a different animal.
Well, and this wasn't a popcorn movie. Like, the Conquest was definitely a drive-in movie, popcorn movie, the equivalent of a horror movie that you make and it's kind of basic and you expect it to make lots of money, but not, you know.
You don't think this was a popcorn movie? This made a shit ton of money.
It was like a tentpole kind of movie, but this was not like a light movie. Although maybe, I don't know, maybe was it portrayed as a light movie?
It was portrayed as like it was marketed as
action adventure.
Yeah, and I think all three of them were, and I don't think they are.
Dude, this is not a kids movie. The Planet of the Apes movies were kids movies.
Yeah,
yeah. This is not a kids movie.
No,
this is a grown up telling of a movie.
I can easily have imagined Aunt Riva would have taken us to any of the Planet of the Apes movies in the first series.
Oh sure,
as kids.
Yeah,
if we had been, or I speak for myself, if I had been brought to this movie as a kid, depending on how old I was, it would have scared the shit out of me. The finger biting thing alone.
Oh yeah, no, Journey couldn't take Coco. I would not take my 8-year-old to this movie.
Well, just the emotional trauma of watching what happens to Caesar.
That too.
Well, the first terrible scene with Caesar's mom. I mean, yeah, that's pretty frightening. So, yeah, no, and you're right. This is a movie about like the, hello, Ice, about hello. The,
wake up, Ducky.
Yeah. Speaking of traumatic moments in this movie, you know, as a grown up, the final scene with the father.
Yeah.
That's pretty rough.
Oh yeah.
And the way they deal with it by just like cutting to packing up the house.
Oh yeah, it's
because for a second you're kind of like, it throws you for a loop. You're like, wait, what happened? Oh, that's pretty rough.
So, and you know, again, this is a pretty ambitious plan for Caesar too, because he ends up stealing the new formula. Or actually, sorry, I skipped the whole plot where Franco goes back and tells Jacobs that, oh yeah, turns out I have all this data on an actual human experiment, blah, blah, blah. And that's, then they find out that, oh no, there's like antibodies or something in humans that prevent it or will eventually not, you know, not make it work. But those aren't present in Ape. So
yeah, he has to go back to Genesis to restart the trials because he has to get a better formula because it's no longer working on his dad.
Again, they have some really lax laboratory practices in safety.
Yeah.
They would not get a safety award.
Yeah, he's an industrial spy. He's not to be trusted.
Yeah, so they're restarting the trials with a new set of apes along at the same time that Caesar is in ape jail. And having to figure out how to survive. And he's not treated very well by Draco Malfoy.
Is that Dodge or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I've never seen any of those movies. By the way, would you recommend those books to an 8-year-old? The first one?
Yeah. I've started trying to read them to my 6- and 5-year-old.
Oh, okay, cool.
I wanted him to die.
In the Harry Potter movie?
No, in this movie.
Well, probably both.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I haven't seen any of the Harry Potter movies or read the book, so. Yeah, no, he was great. He was a great villain. Just the worst. He had the punchable face in this movie.
Yes, why the chicks? Why would chicks be impressed? Like, that's another thing that didn't ring true.
Oh, no, I thought it did.
That's a total D-bag move.
Yeah, you bring your...
No, but why would they be interested enough to come in?
Oh, you know, it's a thing.
It is. It's in San Francisco, you can't get better kicks than that.
No, that's his go-to move.
Yeah. Hey, you want to come see where I work? It's pretty cool.
Nah, I'm up in Simien Valley.
There you go. So yeah, so that's where we have the thing between Will, who's Franco's character, and Jacobs. They have a fight over like the side effects and how it's going to affect humans. And Jacobs, at this point, is like, no, we're full steam ahead. So he quits.
Well, yeah, in the meantime, they restarted trials with an aerosol version of the next generation of the drug, and they tested on Koba, who's a grizzled veteran of laboratory experiments.
Oh, yes.
And that's when a mishap occurs and Franklin gets exposed.
Yeah, Dale.
Because, yeah, just like everybody in movies, nobody actually tightens their respirator straps like they're supposed to.
That's what I'm saying. They have the most lax safety protocols of any laboratory that's testing, you know, bioneurologics.
Yeah. As someone who has had occasion to wear a respirator for work, I just want, this would probably be really boring and take too long, but I want to see a movie where somebody actually puts it on correctly and does the pressure checks to make sure that you will be protected.
Well, when we do the Brothers Anderson movie, we're going to definitely have that in there.
Who's going to play you?
Me? Wayne Knight.
Oh.
Who's going to play you?
I got nothing.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't choose him, sadly.
I would pick Ed Sheeran, so.
Yeah, I got to go with Bradley Cooper.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. It all checks out. So
maybe Sting.
Okay.
You sure? that was a Dune reference.
You sure Sting shouldn't play dead? Well, since Peter Boyle's dead. Anyway, so.
no Carol O'Connor.
Is he dead too?
Yes.
Okay. So that's not fair to Carol O'Connor.
Sorry, Dad, you can't be in the Andersons movie because any actor we can think of to play you has already died.
Yeah.
But a fitting tribute. We're all out of the will now, man.
Yeah, I think I'm out of the will because of the clay dragon I made that Journey looked at and said, "That's Grandpa. You made a Grandpa dragon."
I didn't understand it, but I thought it was funny.
Because it's kind of the bald thing with the hair in the back.
With the eyebrows.
Yeah.
Oh, remind me during housekeeping and I'll tell you why I'm out of the will.
Okay, yes, please. Anyway, so yada, yada, yada. Caesar's playing his grand scheme. He ends up getting some of these aerosol cans. And so he basically bug bombs the whole ape complex.
Well, you yada a brilliant turn by Caesar. Where after getting the crap kicked out of him the first day by the alpha ape, he figures out how to get himself out of the cage, and he makes friends with the giant gorilla, and Buck. Then lures Rocket, the alpha, out there, and just cracks him in the face with a gasoline can, but then has the gorilla to back him up. So
hey, he's the heavy.
Oh yeah, he's the heavy.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got his own goon. So then Rocket has to submit. But then he's smart enough to actually not rub Rocket's nose in it and enlist him in like giving cookies to all the other apes.
Yeah,
makes him a grateful general.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. the thing. He's now his one time rival is now his lieutenant.
Yeah, and instead of face off, they had hand off.
Yeah, you know that comes from the writer's kid. They invented that.
Oh, well, good to know.
Yeah,
it's fine.
Then we get iRobot in reverse. All the animals are climbing out of the top of the tower down the glass.
Oh yeah.
So,
oh, I love that scene when Brian Cox is walking by, and all the apes are just kind of standing around listening to Caesar, and they all pause and just look at Brian Cox.
Oh yeah. No, you know what? The most, it was designed, of course, but when Caesar spoke, it was a thrilling moment for me. It was really powerful.
I hadn't expected it. Yeah.
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 Even in the rewatch, I hadn't expected it.
And it fits. The thing I love about it is it fits with the story created in all those silly other apes movies.
It fits the backstory.
Yeah, it's great. And, you know, one of the things the director and the writers were talking about, because the writers actually made a movie, like this script was developed out of a movie they made about apes that had nothing to do with Planet of the Apes. So they kind of worked it around to make it what the director's vision was, which was the actual reboot that would eventually lead to a movie that would be, or that at least would match up to the Charlton Heston movie. So 3,000 years later, you get, or 2,000 years later, whatever it was. And it does. It works. So far, it works. I hope the other two movies are good. I will be a little irritated if they're not.
I have not seen the third movie. I'm saving my first time viewing for the podcast.
Yeah. No, I'm excited about the next two movies. I wanted to watch the second one.
Me too.
But I didn't do it. I'm like, nope. Got to follow the rules. Plus, we have two movies to do next week with a short week. So.
We do?
Yes. We got Heathers and Pump Up the Volume for Tuesday.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and so we have this big, again, I'm yada-yadding a bunch, but we have this big like set piece fight on the Golden Gate Bridge, which is actually pretty cool. I mean, this is not to compare quite to the respirator pressure test, but I'm always kind of curious how buffoonish like the police and or military are going to be. But I thought this was actually pretty well done. Like it wasn't crazy Nicolas Cage type action. That's not Cage's fault. He didn't write those movies. But it's definitely big stuff. And it all seems to work pretty well. And you get fog in San Francisco, which is a real thing. So it's all there. It's all pretty plausible.
Yeah, and I like the pacing in this movie because it's really slow and deliberate while you're watching the rise of Caesar and the apes. And then when all hell breaks loose.
Yeah.
And it is a sprint to the finish. With really good moments thrown in.
Yeah.
Like I forget what the gorilla's name was, but I mean, that was actually an emotional moment in the movie.
Buck,
yes. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just great. And, like, this is not the end of the story. I know you know that bad things are coming because you can't just kill a bunch of people and end up in the woods.
Yeah, and during this, Franklin tries to find Will at home and ends up coughing blood all over the neighbor.
Yes. Well, and so we can extrapolate that the downfall of the humans. Style. Yeah, this is all based on this. Or is it something? I mean, are we guessing? And it's not fair because Drew's seen the second movie. But when the Icarus comes back from Mars or whatever, what kind of world are they going to land in?
Yeah, I mean, it's when you think of like Outbreak or Contagion type movies. It's funny to think that the entire world dies during the end credits of this movie.
Yeah. Well, and I didn't realize that there was a post-credit scene.
Oh, I didn't either. So I pulled an Idiocracy. If there is a upgrade scene at the end.
Let's see. No, well, at the end, one of the apes is learning to use the rifle. Because, you know, we see Caesar on a horse and whatever. But, you know, they had taken, like, guns and stuff. And so, yeah. So the end kind of, apparently, I haven't seen it. I just read about it. But I have a beautiful version of it that I'll have to go and look at.
I'm pretty sure I watched it all the way to the end. I don't remember seeing that.
Well, it says in the trivia that it has a post-credit scene, which made me sad. Because I went through probably 100 movies watching till the very end of all the credits because I was embarrassed that one time.
More or less embarrassed than when you accidentally put a song at the end of the podcast.
But yeah, I mean, we have, so the asshole pilot is going to kill the world. And Will wants Caesar to come home, but Caesar is home. And that's a powerful scene.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I love this movie. I was glad that I had 6 Planet of the Apes movies under my belt before I saw this movie. Because it made
Are you really?
No, I did. It made it better. Because at this point, I'm invested in the Planet of the Apes.
I would admit that in comparison, this movie is fantastic. It was a good movie, don't get me wrong, but if you look back, it's amazing that this came from that.
Well,
which, you know, only indirectly did it come from that.
Well, no, I'm just saying. I posted an advertisement from Facebook on the Not in a Creepy Way Facebook page about the 50th anniversary showing of the original Planet of the Apes movie at the Beartooth Theater in Anchorage. And, of course, Jason responded, "So you're going to go see it?" I'm like, no, not really. It'd be interesting to see it in a theater, but no. But if I had the chance to see this movie in the theater, I would.
I think it would be interesting to go and see the other movie in the theater, simply so you could maybe interact with some people who saw it and had some kind of super joy over it. So you could interview them and get some of their thoughts.
What? Talk to people?
Exactly. <That's, laughs> yeah, that is a level. That,
wait
that
a minute.
It's not the podcast that I'm doing. I don't know about you. It is a great idea.
I'm sorry. I forgot who I was speaking with. I apologize.
Man, my shoulders just started cramping up thinking about it.
Yeah, I'm sure in Portland they have a 50th anniversary showing in at least, probably in the theater you saw Henry Rollins and Howard Marks in. Howard Jones. Richard
Marks. No, they don't play movies in that theater anymore.
Oh, okay.
And besides that, that wasn't that kind of movie theater.
But it was a movie theater. It's true, yeah. Put your hands on me, you damn dirty ape.
Behind the simian door.
Yeah, there you go. So, any other nitpickery? Or not, sorry, that's diminishing. Do you have any other issues, notes, thoughts, hopes?
No, I covered all of my concerns and observations. I was surprised, even on rewatch. I really like this movie, and again, maybe my standards have been lowered a great deal from the previous 6 movies, but I don't think so. I think this is a pretty good movie. This is a solid movie. So I would give it, it's maybe an A-, B+, but it's pretty strong. It makes me want to watch the next movie, so I that's why I think it's in the A territory.
Yeah, no, I agree.
First time that's happened in this series. Yeah.
So true, was it worth it?
Yeah, I love this movie. I'm really happy that both of you liked it. I think that rarely happens on our podcast where one of us has a movie we're passionate about and all three of us end up sharing the opinion.
Yeah, spoiler, the movie that I'm releasing this week is where you guys talk me out of Chinatown. It's one of my favorite movies. I've been thinking about it since. I'm like, well, okay, I guess you're right. I guess it's not a great movie.
See, that's why it's so weird. I think it is. It's not fun.
Yeah.
It's not enjoyable.
Well, but all of the criticisms are valid, which is as much as I try.
Yeah, but this movie is really fun. It holds up. I mean, it's already 6 or 7 years old, which is crazy to think about because the visual effects are still really good.
No, the CGI was amazing.
You can see the seams a little bit. I have seen the next movie, and I'll say the visual effects in the next movie are, I think, even better. So regardless of what you might end up thinking about that movie, I think we'll all agree that the effects in that movie are amazing.
Well, tell me, just please promise me there's no Paul Giamatti in the next movie.
There's Gary Oldman.
Oh, God.
Sweet. Tell me he's playing on his knees like I'm. Like
and Kerry Russell.
Ah.
I want to say Woody Harrelson might be in the third
one. No, I've heard he's in the third one, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. That's a little on the nose.
But yeah, no, this I really like this movie.
Kelsey Grammer's really... in the fifth one.
Oh, Judy perfect. Greer. Wow. Okay.
Judy Tenuta.
Wow. Wow. Okay, the next movie, just jumping ahead just slightly. The next movie was, oh my God, budgeted at $170 million.
Well, okay, I have a bold suggestion.
And the gross was 208 in the U.S. and cumulative worldwide 710 million.
Oh, yeah. You want to do it?
Also,
do you want to do it on Tuesday? Also,
We could. This is, by the way, this movie is substantially longer.
This one is?
The
second one, okay.
And then
I'd be happy to do it on Tuesday if you want to jump right into it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
I'm excited about it, and that gives me a little bit longer to watch two different movies.
Yeah, and then I think the third movie is even longer yet.
Cool. Yeah, I'm into it. I'm so excited about it.
They get progressively longer. Let me take a look. I'm just pretty sure.
I could have used another half hour of this movie. It was well paced. You're right. It started out with a bang, and then it turned into this kind of almost like a Lifetime movie, Hallmark movie, a Sunday movie on TV kind of thing, or a Spielberg movie, and then bam, at the end, it hits you with all this stuff.
Well, the next movie is a half an hour longer, and the third movie is 10 minutes longer than the second movie, so it's 40 minutes longer than the first. So,
did you guys watch any of the extra features for this
Not
movie?
Not yet. I didn't have a chance, but...
So, there are some deleted scenes.
That's what I'm going to watch.
And often, in a movie that I love, I just want more. Like Eric, you said, you could use a half hour more. But I think something that speaks really well of the people that crafted this movie, not only the director, but also the editor, the deleted scenes, there's at least one of them that is really terrible and might have just submarined the movie if it was left in. So I'm glad it wasn't. It's a scene that is during the ape uprising, and it's a scene where Koba actually captures Jacobs in the Genesis building and straps him down to a gurney and feeds him, like force feeds him the aerosol drug.
Oh, yeah,
that's it was a little much, and so you know, watching that and realizing that they just made all the right choices for this movie.
Yeah, spoiler, the original end of this movie, James Franco was going to be gunned down, kind of like Buck.
Yeah, no, I think
I'm glad they didn't do that. Yeah.
Because it makes it more tragic, even though we realize he doesn't have a lot of time for tragedy.
Yeah, this is a really good movie. If you have suffered through any of the previous Apes movies, you should watch this movie. And especially if you have watched the Tim Burton movie, just wash that horrible taste out of your mouth and watch this movie instead.
Well, again, I'm gonna agree with you guys after the fact. Skip the Tim Burton movie altogether. I say after watching this movie and how it ties with the older, more quaint movies, Tim Burton movie is a waste of your time. There's nothing in there that adds anything to your life.
Yeah, and having this movie in my memory is another reason why that Tim Burton movie just wounded and insulted me so much.
Yeah. So, excellent. I'm so excited. So we'll do the next movie next week.
Yeah.
And we'll go from there. So, on to housekeeping. Okay. My in-laws have, I want to say it's a 2010. It's somewhere in that vintage of Mercedes SUV. And the other day, they're both in the car. And I don't know if they must have been stopped at a light or maybe in a parking lot or something. But he's like, oof, this heated seat. And stands up. And the seat has melted. And he's got embers, burning embers on his buttocks.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So they're like, "Whoa!" So
that sounds really dangerous.
Yeah, so he wasn't hurt or anything, but they put out the fire and then took it into Mercedes, who said, "Yeah, that happens. It's normal wear and tear. $1,700 to fix it, please."
That's normal wear and tear.
Yeah. I've since discovered, and I'm sure they
did too. I didn't realize it was the Nazi mobile where it was meant to incinerate you.
Yeah, well, they didn't get their 23andMe back. They don't know that they were Jews. I thought that was funny and sad. Well, not sad, but funny and weird. I think, though, that I've looked it up online, and they actually, Mercedes actually paid, settled a class action lawsuit about this very thing. So this vehicle may end up being covered up to $1,000 worth of coverage, but we'll see.
Jeez.
That'd be good.
But, you know, my stepbrother-in-law, he's retired. He has time to go full on GE.
I was going to say.
He'll be quoting David Letterman's new cable show or whatever to the Germans.
Yeah, I got a relatively quick one too, about why I'm out of the will.
Uh-oh.
So yesterday, Dad came into my office because my office window is the ideal one for him to start his car with remote starter.
How did I know that's what was coming?
And it was acting up. I guess it was beeping at him in a weird way when he was in his office, so he came to see what was up, and it was doing weird stuff. Like it would show that his doors were unlocked, and he would lock it, and they would show they were locked for a second, and then it would go back to being unlocked. So he was like, I don't know what's going on. And this is towards the end of the day. For him, he usually leaves a little bit earlier than I do, and so I think he was gonna leave even a little earlier than normal and go check it out to make sure everything was okay. So I didn't think anything of it. And then probably 45 minutes or an hour later, I was leaving. And when I'm pulling out of the parking lot, I noticed he, was pulling out of the parking lot behind me. So I just kind of waved and he went his way. I went my way. And then this morning he came in, he's like, thanks for helping me with my car. And come to find out, the reason his auto start was acting up was that his battery was totally dead. He'd left his lights on. Oh, wow. And they didn't automatically turn off like he expected them to.
Huh, that's really surprising.
Yeah, and his car was dead, like his power locks wouldn't work. So he had to manually open his door with his key, you know, like a peasant. But then try and crawl over the back seat to get to his little power pack jump starter that he kept in the way back because he had no other way to open the door back there. Because it's a power lift door and everything. Wow. So he had
the jump box thing. That's awesome.
He had. But also, while they were on vacation, mom's battery died. So he had jumped her car the night before, and then he started to worry that he didn't have enough juice left to jump his car.
So he left it at home to charge?
No, he had it. He had it, but he was worried that it might not have enough juice. But then he couldn't, something was wonky with his hood, and he couldn't get that to pop open either, so... he was having a hard time getting that hook. So he was like, I guess he was doing all this. And then I just like came down and walked right by him and got in my car and just as he was finishing up and was driving away. And he was like, yeah, I almost called you to come over and give me a jump. I was like, it's like, huh. And I just like drove by, like waved like, ah, see you tomorrow.
Yeah.
So that happened.
So did he just buy a new battery or what?
There's probably nothing wrong with the battery.
Yeah, he was able to start his car and yeah, he charged it up when he got home.
It's really unusual because all of the new Fords have the auto off. So
that's what he thought.
Yeah.
So what did you think about the 2 hours, almost 2 hours of housekeeping?
I loved it.
It was fun for me. I don't know who else would want to listen to it.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I laughed.
I thought there were good stories from everybody in it. I thought it was fun.
I agree. I laughed. I laughed quite a bit.
Yeah.
I was quite enamored. So,
okay, so Brother Jay, housekeeping.
All right. So first, shout out to Kevin Smith for not dropping dead.
Yes.
So I'm glad that he survived his heart incident. Well, so far.
Did he have a heart attack?
Yes.
He almost died.
He thought he drank some spoiled milk or something and threw up and was feeling really sweaty. And somebody who was on his, I think he was at some sort of event, right?
He had just finished one of two shows at a club.
Yeah. And so whoever he was with is like, oh no, you need to get into an ambulance. And, they took him to the hospital, and he had a 100% blockage in his, like, main artery.
Ooh.
And they told him it was the Widowmaker, that had he not gone immediately to the hospital, he would be dead.
That's scary.
And he, it was funny, because if you should look at the Twitter, he tweeted, or Facebook, I think it was Twitter, though, this whole thing about how, he has apparently survived a massive heart attack. And it kind of goes through the whole thing of, you know, I was in the hospital thinking, oh, I might die, you know. I mean, and he has, again, you should seek it out because it was really well written.
He posted a live video on Facebook, which I watched, where he talks about.
Maybe that was it.
And it's lengthy, but I watched most of it. But at one point I couldn't watch anymore. It was making me uncomfortable. He was talking about. He didn't really understand what was going on. His dad died of a massive heart attack, and his mother has two stents. So he was concerned when they got there and went to take him to the hospital. Like they were like, you know, we need to shave you because we're gonna have to do surgery and go up in your groin to go up to your heart. He was like, yeah, but no, you don't understand. My underwear doesn't come off. Nobody needs to see my junk, and like. That's the least of your concerns right now. You are going to die.
Yeah.
And he was like, no, but you don't understand. And they're like, you are going to die. So it was just kind of that discordant, like you're focused on the wrong thing, perhaps. Maybe you need to step back and evaluate. So, but I'm glad he's doing better at least. So.
Yeah.
He's home.
Yeah,
he's amazing.
I mean, we live in good times for that sort of stuff. Because you can just pop a stent in there. Like our grandfather, Clyde, could have lived a lot longer had they had modern technology, but they didn't.
Yeah. So, you know, good on research.
Yeah.
Let's
just hope he doesn't have that Robin Williams thing that people with heart attacks end up having issues afterward, like depression issues. But who knows? Anyway. But yeah, you should seek out and read what he posted on either Twitter or Facebook, the written part of it, because he talks about reflecting on his life, and it was very interesting. And then I guess somebody on the comments of that, somebody said, you know, like, God bless you or something. And then one of the other Kevin Smith people was like, keep your God thoughts to yourself, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like, went off on this person for mentioning, you know, like, bringing God into the conversation. And Kevin Smith is like, no, hey, everybody, calm down. Thank you for your prayers. Everybody should get along. So, as I imagine is how you would feel after surviving what could have easily been your death.
Yeah.
So, anyway, yeah. Yeah, so good on you, Kevin Smith. Hopefully you'll make lots and lots and lots of greater or lesser quality movies in the future. Oh, that's
so
weird.
Shout out to him. I think I texted you, like, Death Wish, really?
I saw the Wish commercial, just the worst.
So, anyway. Well, so, that's all I have to say about that.
Didn't they just do that with Kevin Bacon a couple years ago?
I don't know. But the original Death Wish, the Charles Bronson Death Wish, isn't like a great movie. It's just sort of almost like an exploitation movie. So
I remember them being awful.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a straight up a daughter gets raped or wife gets killed or whatever, and then it's a revenge movie from that on. But which is, you know, a song as old as rhyme, a tale as old as time, or whatever. But yeah, why polish that turd? Why not just make a different Bruce Willis turd?
No, you don't have to fair point. You don't have to rewrite. I mean, you don't have to create a new story from scratch. You can just steal something.
Yeah, it's just lazy.
I'm sure they will say it's homage, but
It was probably just another script, and they threw Death Wish on it, the name on it, just to capitalize on that. Somebody probably had the rights.
Yeah, they could have done that and just changed the names.
Well, not even
moving parts.
Are the names, do they even match up?
I didn't.
Is it the same story?
I didn't.
Just the same.
I didn't. I saw the ad and I moved on.
I'm sorry. I realize you're not the executive producer of this piece of crap, but, and maybe it'll be great.
Yeah. So in 2007, Kevin Bacon was in a movie called Death Sentence, which is based on the same source material that the original Death Wish was.
Which
I guess was a novel.
Interesting. What?
Or not? Never mind. Forget I mentioned it.
I downloaded the audiobook for The Ghost Writer. I listened to the book because I wanted, after having watched the movie again, I had to go back to the book because I wanted to see how different the book was. And I rather really liked the book, so. Book's a lot different. Not a lot different. The book has some fair differences that I think would have better served the movie, but I understand some of the choices. But the book's pretty good, so I recommend it. And it's, it was narrated by Roger Ease, who has passed away, but if you watch any of The West Wing, he was Lord John Marbury, so.
Okay, I'm going to plead ignorance on all of that.
Anyway,
but
you probably recognize him if you saw him. He's a funny. He played a very funny character on The West Wing. But he's done tons of stuff, not just The West Wing. So,
interrupt there, because it turns out this isn't a tit for tat thing, but I rediscovered Stephen King.
On purpose?
Yeah, I listened to. I don't know why I decided. I must have heard some sort of, maybe it was the TV Terror where they talked about some of the Stephen King TV adaptations, but I for some reason, I just got in the Stephen King mode, and I have actually bought a lot of Stephen King books that I have not actually read, because it turns out Stephen King books can be like 40 hours long. So, you know, I want to support what was at one point my favorite author. But on the other hand, I was like, oh, am I going to listen to all of this? Really? I just never find the time for that, something that long. But I realized I had bought Bazaar of Dreams or something, whatever like his latest short story collection was. And also, either it was on sale or it was free, but there's a story from that that has a single called Drunken Fireworks. And it's like an hour and a half long, maybe. Maybe even quite a little bit less than that. It's one single little short story called Drunken Fireworks. It's great. It's everything I like in a Stephen King story because it's all about character. So I'm now listening to all of the short stories from there, including it, like the like novella which was the first Stephen King Kindle novel. And, you know, I forgot he did all that stunt stuff. Like he put out The Green Mile as a serial, and he put out a serialized novel, not like a breakfast cereal. And he's basically, Stephen King basically has done one of everything he's ever wanted to do. Like if he's admired an author, he has written a book or a bunch of stories in that author's style, which is sort of a trick, but is also pretty awesome because he just has the best characters. Anyway, that's all. Drunken Fireworks. Seek it out.
But he throws the Stephen King flavoring of having a terrible ending on.
Yeah, sometimes, style. Yeah. Yeah, the short stories are better because you don't have time to build up to like all these characters that he's going to end up trashing on the last two chapters. But
they don't have a time to spoil by the end.
Yeah, but when you think about all those Stephen King books, like the original short stories books, like Night Shift or Different Seasons.
And The Jaunt.
Like, well, yeah, like Night Shift. Like every one of those stories has been made into movies, and partly it's because he would give film school students the right to some of those stories for like a dollar. So some of those have been, you know, what's turned out to be student films have been adapted into other things. But pretty much every story in Night Shift has been adapted into either a full on movie or some sort of like part of an anthology. And it's great. It's amazing. The guy's amazing. And then, of course, he had his own near-death experiences and experiences with like fighting off his demons and stuff. So that all appears in all the longer novels. So, you know, you kind of have to live his journey as well. So I'm not a completist, definitely like when I was a little kid or I guess a teenager. But anyway, so. Okay, back to Jay.
Have you seen the ads for or the series of Waco?
Taping it.
Sorry, Siri apparently.
Yeah. Siri was like,
"Hey." I guess I said the series of. So,
oh, there you go.
She got excited. I was looking at the previews today. Wow, Michael Shannon.
Yeah, I want to. We got Waco. We're gonna watch. I also want to watch the Assassination of Gianni Versace. Because that's on demand, as you pointed out.
That's what that was going to be one of my next questions. So it's the Assassination of because I there's like four different Versace things on my cable system, and I couldn't figure out which one.
Yeah,
the Assassination. It's American Crime Story.
Oh, yeah.
: The Assassination of Gianni Versace.
Okay, because I was looking at a couple, and the couple didn't look right. So I'm like, oh, I think somebody else is capitalizing. The cross merchandising to try and capitalize on people like me who might accidentally pick the wrong thing.
What's there's another edition of American Crime Story coming up too, right? What's the third one?
They did OJ, and then they were going to do something about Katrina, but they couldn't pull that together in time, so they skipped it and went to Versace. So I think they're going to go back and do something related to Katrina.
I think it's going to be the bridge story. I'm trying to think of a Katrina crime story.
Yeah, I think they ran the creators ran into the same conundrum.
Yeah, I think so too. We'll see though. It'd be interesting. After listening to all the housekeeping, I want to go and watch the second season, or maybe it was just last week we were talking about this. I want to watch the second season of True Detective too now, in all my free time.
I know that feeling. Have either of you seen the movie Invasion with Nicole Kidman and Daniel Craig?
Is it the Invasion of Body Snatchers?
Yes.
I have.
Is that the one where she can't Go to Sleep?
I've never seen it. I don't know. I just saw an ad for it, and I thought, Nicole Kidman and Daniel Craig, I mean, that's a pretty interesting combo of acting talent. So it intrigued me, but I didn't know if it was worth watching.
I'm pretty sure I've seen it, and I'm pretty sure it's not great.
Okay.
All right. We need to, at some point, this is not, I mean, this is maybe a 2020 movie, but we need to see the Donald Sutherland Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Oh, God. I haven't seen that in forever.
Yeah, as it turns out, it's really good. I mean,
I remember it scaring the shit out of me as a kid, so.
Yeah, I think Leonard Nimoy's in it, and.
I think so, too.
Bess Armstrong, maybe. I don't know.
But Donald Sutherland is haunting.
It's great, yeah.
I like all my hair just stood up. Just. Let's see, what else? Two more things. See, I told you I had a list.
That's fine.
I have a whole list of things written down.
Hey, we have, as we found out from last week's episode, week before last episode, we have plenty of time for housekeeping.
So I think I sent you both videos of my new garbage can.
Yes.
Yes.
Apparently, I knew it was motion sensing. I didn't know you could talk to it to make it open. And when you talk, it obviously it opens automatically when you talk, and the dog does not like it at all.
Can the dog open it?
Moves. The dog can open it. So it's going to be interesting, but we don't keep a lot of stuff in there anyway because they're not very big cans. Because one's it's half of it's recycle, half of it's garbage.
Okay,
so
I know I've had this conversation with you, but. This is Drew. This is maybe redemption on your part because this is where your oldest brother seems like a crazy person. But I once wrote a blog post about this and nobody was very responsive to it no one was taking my side of it. But it drives me crazy when my wife puts garbage in the trash can. Meaning... the trash can is for a tall kitchen garbage can is for, you know, little things, like an accumulation of little things. But if you had like a milk carton and you threw a milk carton, which basically fills up the entire trash can, that's not trash. That's garbage. That needs to go out to the garbage can.
What kind of midget garbage can do you have that can't fit a milk carton?
No, it can fit a milk carton, but it can't fit. I mean, we play this game of Jenga.
A Tetris, I think, perhaps.
No, it's Jenga because shit gets real. And it's I realized it
just becomes like a Dr. Seuss pile, yes, as you play chicken about who's going to take it out.
Exactly. Well, no, there's no question about
Sarah, who's Sylvia, take it out. Cynthia Stout would not take the garbage out.
Oh, there we go. Yeah. No. And again, this is, I'm not whinging about my wife. It's just and it's hard to explain. You don't put garbage in the trash can. The trash can is for trash. You should see a trash can. You should see a trash can emptying coming from like hours away. If you need to put garbage, grab a garbage bag and put a garbage in it and take it out to the. But it makes me the crazy person.
I can sympathize with you a little bit. I think being upset about a milk carton is going a little overboard.
No, it's the fact that it's not a milk carton, it's a milk jug, and it is not squished in any way. It takes up half of the trash. But
that's a recyclable, isn't it?
We don't recycle anymore because it turned out to be way too expensive. Yeah. Also...
In Portland, we have recycle and compost, which includes yard debris. So, and then garbage.
And that's like mandated, right?
It's not mandated. However, this is how the city traps you into it. So, garbage service is only once a month.
That would be a trap.
And you can't get a very big can. I don't even think it's a 30-gallon can for our garbage. Now, our recycle and our compost bins are gigantic. You could fit a crap ton, a metric ton of crap in the compost and
but
recycle
do they just,
bins.
They just sit outside?
Yes.
Yeah, because we're not allowed to have any of that stuff outside.
Well, I mean, they all sit outside. I mean, they don't sit out front of my house, but there's a place that they sit on the side of my house inside. Not inside, but in my yard.
Hello, Ice.
Hello. You wake up. So they trap you in Portland is the recycle and compost yard debris is free, and they pick it up every week. You pay for garbage service. You can pay for it twice a month, but it's super expensive. You pay for it once a month, and it's more affordable. So the impetus is on you. The more that you can compost and recycle, the less you're going to need the garbage service, which, as it turns out, is necessary because you run out of space very quickly. Yeah, so
that's...
we bought a dual... I mean, the garbage can that I bought today was... because I had two separate garbage cans... one for recycle, one for garbage in the house. And then now it's just one unit and it has two different bins inside. So, and it's a nicer garbage can than I had. So anyway, that was just, it was funny that my dog was freaking out at it. So we'll see how that works out. And if he doesn't end up, you know, face deep in the garbage can tomorrow, which would be bad for everybody.
I told you that the SodaStream I inherited, drives the dog crazy.
The whistle,
just the whole. I mean, now she sees me coming with the bottle, like filling up the bottle, or taking like even if I just rinse out the bottle and put the bottle of cold water in the fridge to make it cold, she will start barking. And if I put it in the machine, she goes insane.
Hmm.
Yeah, but will it give her a heart attack? Not reliably.
And then my final note, which is just really geekery and technology wankery, is that I'm an early adopter for the new Owl dash cams. So they have developed, the maker I guess he used to be an Apple executive and he spun off this company on his own. They make these new dash cams that are... LTE, meaning they run on their own to the web, basically, over a cell signal. So they hook into your ODB sensor system in your car, and it records video front and back, so interior of your car and front exterior view. And because it's hooked up to your sensors and you have the little app on your phone, it notifies your phone if there's motion in your car gets bumped, and you can live look into your car and talk to somebody through the speaker, like, get the hell out of my car. Also, because it's going to the cloud and recording, even if they steal the camera, you have video of them stealing everything. And it's LTE, so it's hooked to your phone, which means somebody else can't steal it and use it easily, so... So I will be getting that tomorrow. It will be interesting to see because I have a dash cam already.
Well, we saw your fartery reset.
Yeah. So it's been a hassle because they have to take it out every time or somebody's going to break in the car and steal it. But this allows you, you know, to look in the vehicle. Plus it, you know, since it records to the cloud, all you have to do is tell it to record a clip and it will. So it's pretty interesting. I'm excited to see what it looks like and what it does. So
sweet.
I'll be reporting back on that next week.
Awesome.
Provided it installs okay tomorrow. I'm a little leery about it plugging directly into the ODB system, but we'll see.
Is that how it gets powered or how does it?
Yeah, it must.
Huh. Interesting.
But that's also because I'm guessing it can do other things in the car. Like, I mean, it must sense, it must be able to get the shock sensor to the vehicle, but it can turn the lights on in the car purportedly. So. Because you can can tell it to turn the light on in the car and be like, hey, I can see you.
Is that just going to be like a constant minor draw on your battery?
I don't know. That's why I'm really interested to find out. Because that would be not good. But it's rechargeable. So ostensibly, it has an onboard battery. So ostensibly, it will only draw system power if it absolutely needs it. And since, you know, if you drive it enough, it charges the battery. So it'll be a learning experience.
Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on our new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.